The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Well, let's start the insanity. Giddy up.
New York Bozo! New York!
Yes, indeed. 32 to 18. The Packers over the Rams. And the NFC Championship game is going through Green Bay. A special season continues with a really, really fun game here tonight. I am Zach Rapport at Zach Rapport on Twitter. This is the APC podcast. We are two schlitz to the wind here with our rapid recap podcast, The Final Whistle. Actually, it was about an hour ago. We're a little bit late today, but you know, it is what it is. I'm going to raise a glass here. I got Buffalo Trace. I'm going to toast, to my co-host for today across the country. It is Tex Western. How are you, man?
Cheers. I am feeling great. I'm really excited for Aaron Rodgers to finally get to play an NFC Championship game at home. Oof. So that's super exciting. And, I'm choosing to celebrate with an Alberta Premium Cask Strength Rye Whiskey. So keep an eye out for that one if you see that on the show.
Good stuff. I like this little fancy little dram glass you got here.
Oh, yeah. That's a little tasting glass from one of the distillery tours I did about a year ago before COVID made that a non-possibility. So
you said you were double fisting. What else is on your table there?
So I went and I had to stock up on some Wisconsin beer today because I was just about out. So I have a oatmeal cream IPA from Untitled Art Brewing in Wanakee.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it's all Wisconsin or with the Alberta frozen tundra in, you know, a little different fashion.
I don't normally go all out with drinks and snacks and stuff. I usually have like a pretty zen football watching situation. But this being the season that it is, the year that it is and has been, and the importance of this game, my sister had sent me a Wisconsin-shaped cutting board, serving board kind of thing, and I thought I'd put that to you. So I got some port wine cheese spread. We got some brats. I beer boiled them, made a whole nice little spread. I even picked up a little bit of beer. And we had ourselves a little snackathon, and I think that we contributed to the game in a meaningful way.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's been a thing for me as long as I can really remember that anytime the Badgers or Packers are playing, I've got to have a Wisconsin brewed beer in some fashion in my hand at the ready.
You don't make the rules; you just follow them.
Exactly.
Let's get into it, man. 32 to 18, the final score here. I want to start with, I think, the unheralded crew, the offensive line.
Yes.
So no Bakhtiari, of course. They bring in Jared Valdir, who promptly gets COVID, and he's not available. I think he had symptomatic COVID, so we don't even know if he'd be available next week, actually. So we'll see about that. But all of that aside, no sacks allowed. Rodgers leaves this game with a clean jersey against the best defense in the league. A hell of an effort by the offensive line today.
Tremendous. And doing that against a team that fields Aaron Donald. And even an Aaron Donald at maybe 60 or 70% is still better than probably, you know, 60 or 70% of defensive tackles in the NFL. And yeah. the fact that he basically was a non-factor. In fact, if anything, you know, he probably hurt the Rams in a couple of instances more than he helped them. You know, taking a stupid personal foul penalty for going after Elgton Jenkins after Jenkins ate his lunch and, you know, early in the first quarter. Jenkins controlled him all game. The Packers had some tremendous success running the ball as well as protecting Aaron Rodgers. They controlled the line of scrimmage pretty much throughout. And that, I think, you know, really, you know, there's so many storylines you could go to, but that absolutely is one of the big storylines of this game.
Yeah. And I thought the penalty was a great example of, proof of just how, hurt Donald was, because I thought it was indicative of a player coming in and say, let me rattle this young guy's cage and get him off of his game. And all that ended up happening was a pretty impactful penalty.
Yeah, because I think that was after, if it was after a failed third down, if I'm not mistaken, extended that drive.
It kept the drive alive.
Yep. So, you can't say enough about Jenkins. You can't say enough about Corey Linsley. I did see an interesting quote from Linsley after the game, basically saying that the Packers really used the Rams' gap shooting tendencies against them in the running game and their aggressiveness in terms of going with some inside zone runs more so than the outside zone that the Packers usually love to do. And most of their big plays in the running game seemed like they were up the middle on some of those inside zone plays. So kudos to, whoever on the offensive coaching staff that identified that as an area that they could attack.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting angle. We can get a bit into that right now, actually. I mean, a storyline coming into this game was LaFleur versus McVay, the battle of the brainy bros, we called it during the week. And I just thought that Matt LaFleur had a great game plan. It was really clever. And a play that I think really sums that up for me is the touchdown pass to Davante Adams, where they use Adams in motion. They get Ramsey off balance, and then they sneak in that quick strike for the touchdown. Just brilliant stuff from LaFleur there.
It was beautiful. We talked about it on our post-game live stream a little bit, that it was very reminiscent of some of the plays that Alabama used in the national championship game on Monday night against Ohio State to get Devontae Smith open, you know, in the red zone and even kind of all over the field. But we've kind of figured that using motion was going to be a key against Jalen Ramsey to try to separate him from the Packers receivers a little bit and Davante Adams in particular. And that play, I think, was the best example of that in action. Then he throws a tantrum afterwards too, right? Because you force a mistake by a young inexperienced player in Jordan Fuller, the Rams safety, who seemed to kind of get caught up with Ramsey in the secondary and didn't let him get back over to the other side of the field to cover Adams the way he wanted to.
Yeah.
So tremendous game plan from LaFleur. So much great stuff off of play action. Some real big plays in the passing game that way. And just the usual kind of chain moving plays on third downs that the Packers have become used to converting. I mean, geez, they converted 8 of 12 third down opportunities in this game against the number one defense in the NFL. You can't ask for better than that.
Yeah. Yeah, Ramsey was really pissed after that touchdown play. And to me, it felt like the trope of like when a supervillain knows they've been bested, they could see it in real time that they just got outsmarted and that it was like maybe someone else's fault.
And I feel like it was pissed. Skeletor screaming into the ether.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Curses, LaFleur. Exactly. Well, you mentioned as well the Packers taking advantage of the Rams kind of shooting the gap, and I thought that another example of LaFleur's cleverness, the offensive cleverness, was the way that they really mixed up using different running backs. I think they really kept the Rams defense guessing. There was a drive where it was all runs, and I feel like every running back got a carry there. There was the very first Dylan carry of the game, and we're hoping for the best for him as he went out with what looked like a pretty serious injury. But that first carry of his in the game, he's the only back there. You could just tell that the Rams defense got caught in a look where they're like, we are positive they are not running the ball. And it's it was the exact opposite. And I felt like there were a couple instances of that as well.
Yeah, the three-headed running back attack. I mean, Matt LaFleur talked about that going way back to the combine this past year, this past February. about wanting to have three running backs that he could roll through in the postseason in Green Bay when the weather gets bad. And you finally started to see that in this game, where it was the first time that they've really have had all three running backs healthy, available, and they used them all. I mean, each one of those guys got at least six carries in the game. You saw several instances of the Packers using that that Bronco package with A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones in the backfield together in the shotgun, and Jones kind of motioning out. And it seems like they can do some really interesting different things out of that alignment. And they complemented each other this time, too. It really felt like they used each running back to his strengths. You saw Jamal Williams come in for some short yardage plays. A couple of third and twos, I feel like, were in there that he was consistently picking up 4 or 5 yards on. Jones, obviously, with the big play to start the second half and just using his tremendous balance to keep some plays alive, and then using Dillon as a little bit of a hammer. It was, I think, the platonic ideal of the Packers running game kind of rolled into one, with all these guys being productive in the ways that they are most effective individually.
Yeah. On the other side of the coin, what did you think about the other coach, Sean McVay, and the game that he got his team ready for? I was a little confused by some of those wildcat moments that they went to. Ultimately, they did get a touchdown off of a wildcat play, although, you know, that was, I believe, was Chris Barnes in there one-on-one with a Mega Man club. He was not going to make that stop. They did get the 2-point conversion. I felt like that was a clever play. I also, at the, you know, in that situation, have zero faith in Mike Pettine making making the call to make that stop. But the wildcat stuff was weird. I don't know. What was your overall feeling of what the cleverness of McVay in this game?
I think there were some really good aspects to his game plan. The tempo that they used really seemed to trip up Mike Pettine a little bit in terms of the personnel groupings that he was using. Because on first down, LA seemed like they'd come out in like a 12 package with two tight ends, and the Packers would line up in base to counter that. And then LA would go tempo, and then all of a sudden be in an empty package and have everybody split out. And the Packers had to figure out what the hell to do with a base defense defending against five wide. And that really seemed like it was giving Pettine problems. There were some weird zone blitzes. There was one point where he had both Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry both drop back into coverage on the same play.
Yeah.
And got fortunate that, that Goff only threw a short pass for about 4 yards or so on that play. But that really seemed to be the part where the Packers defense was struggling the most. And then all of a sudden, then they would throw in one of these wildcat snaps, and it kind of, it almost seemed like they were outsmarting themselves, and it was breaking up the rhythm of this offense that they had created that was being really effective.
Yep.
The other thing that I thought was interesting was early on they were having a lot of success targeting the middle of the field against the Packers zone, which teams tend to have a lot of success doing that when they commit to it. And it kind of felt like they got away from that a little bit later on in the game, and they got back to more of the short passing, some receiver screens and things, and keeping things to the sidelines and in the short to intermediate game. So I think there were things that LA did really well, but then I think they got away from those, and that's when the Packers defense started to take over a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll talk more in depth about the Packers defense specifically in a second. One more thing that I wanted to hit on the Packers offense was a new segment I'm calling Two Things I Was Right About, if I can gloat for a moment here, because I said on this show and on Twitter as well that I thought that Adams would still impact this game, even if that just looked like 60 yards and a clutch touchdown, and that's exactly what happened. And I also said on air and text you and I back and forth in the DMs, look for a sneaky productive game from Alan Lazard. I guess I was only half right about that, because this was a really productive game from that guy. 4 catches for 96 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, Lazard was, and he, I think he what, had 8 targets, and one of those he did have a brutal drop on what probably should have been a touchdown.
Little alligator arms there.
Yeah, on that second drive of the third quarter. And it's, I don't know what it is about that third quarter, but the execution just isn't crisp. in some of those these drives coming out of halftime. And whether it was Rodgers overthrowing MVS or Lazard on that blatant drop. But damn, did he make up for that with a tremendous catch on his touchdown in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
That was a tough one because, I mean, that throw was a little bit out in front of him. He really had to stretch out and make a pretty significant extension for that football. And, you know, he had taken that to the house to basically put the dagger in. And then, I mean, I think all of his other three catches went for first downs, and at least a couple of them were third down conversions yet again. So, yeah, shout out to the alien lizard for coming up big. And, yeah, he is very much a third down weapon, and he has been, you know, the entire, you know, last basically season and a half, aside from that little stretch that he missed earlier this season.
Yeah. Well, you will transition out of the defense, but you mentioned the check your watch like clockwork third quarter slump from the Packers offense. Likewise on defense. We got like this quasi prevent defense in the third quarter. The game was not in hand, and it's just another game where the Packers give up less than 20 points. And yet I am left feeling so annoyed with Mike Pettine. Am I crazy? I feel like Principal Skinner when he's like, no, it's the children who were wrong. Like, am I wrong? I don't, Pettine.
Yeah, it seems so strange that this defense can be so good. I mean, in the fourth quarter, again, all of a sudden you look and it's a 7-point game. You've given up a touchdown. The Packers punt. Now you pinned LA deep a little bit inside, I think, their own 10-yard line. And all of a sudden he's calling press coverage, and he's got his pass rushers getting home. And because there's no room for Jared Goff to throw the football because there are no zones to throw the football into, because you have corners who can play press coverage pretty well. And why you wouldn't do that in the third quarter, but you do it to start the fourth quarter is just mind boggling. So I to be honest with you, like around the mid-teens is what I expected from this team, from the Rams to put up. But I thought that it was going to be more because Jared Goff just wasn't playing well, and maybe there would be one weird turnover on offense that we weren't expecting that would give them some good field position. But Goff, I thought, you know, played a pretty decent game for the most part.
Definitely.
Especially, again, when the Packers were in zone. But as soon as they switched to press and the pass rush got going and they started teeing off, everything changed. And so that's the secret for this team, right? Is if you can jump out to an early lead, get the opponents to be a little bit one-dimensional, get them a little bit away from their running game, and let your pass rushers tee off. You saw what the Smiths and Rashawn Gary could do and Kenny Clark in that fourth quarter when they were not worried about having to defend the run.
Yeah.
They were making life a living hell for Jared Goff. And it's just, it is frustrating that it seems like Pettine won't go to that press man coverage until late in the fourth quarter,
right,
when he really needs the stop instead of just when it would be really nice to have a stop, you know?
I was chatting with our buddy Justice Mosqueda. He basically, you know, whenever Pettins, we hit the DMs and just kind of like share a few messages back and forth, and or rather I bother him and he's nice enough to respond to me.
I don't know anybody who is more anti Mike Pettine than Justice.
he basically said something along the lines of we're lucky that this defense is so talented that even a bozo like Pettine can't ruin it for him.
No, that's a great point. They mentioned this on the Reporting as Eligible podcast this week. They were talking a little bit, Paul Noonan and Matub and those guys were kind of talking about why is the Rams defense better than the Packers? Because as far as pure player talent goes, they stack up really well against one another.
Yeah.
Okay, the Packers don't maybe have Aaron Donald, but nobody else has an Aaron Donald. But they've got Kenny Clark, who's still damn good.
Yeah.
They've I would take the Packers group of edge rushers over the Rams. I think Jair Alexander and Jalen Ramsey match up really well. I think I'd take the Packers safeties. Like, at every level of the defense, I think the Packers talent is just as good, but their results are not. And I think that is absolutely an indictment on coaching, or yep. or a signifies the difference in the level of coaching that those two units have. So yeah, I think he's absolutely right that in this case, you know, the talent has started to shine through in the second half of the season. And maybe some of that was the meeting that the guys had with Pettin, you know, in like week 10 or 11 or so.
Yeah.
I know you and we've talked about it a little bit, that, you know, simplify things and let us just do our jobs and don't make things too complicated. Because at that point, you know, the Packers have studs on that side of the football.
Yep.
I don't think you can make an argument with that. And when you let those guys just unleash the talent that they have, good things happen.
Yeah. I was mostly just thrilled to have Justice use Bozo as an insult. It's actually in my Twitter bio that I'm a huge proponent of Bozo as an insult. Need to bring that back. Need to use it more.
The New York Bozo is in the pod intro. So
there it is. It's on the board. You mentioned Jared Goff and, he was 21 of 27, 174 yards, one touchdown, no interceptions. He was like pretty good. He was efficient, but he was
better than I thought he would be with a bad thumb in the cold.
Yeah,
so I'll give him that.
I agree. But even the stats that I just rattled off and sort of the general taste in my mouth with his performance at the end of the day, I'm left thinking about comments that that my partner made during the game, seeing this person for the very first time. Seeing their physical person, the way they look on camera, et cetera, and the way that they carry themselves. She called him Mr. Forgettable, which I feel like is like, that's hashtagable. She also said that he's basically a vanilla Pocky stick. You know the Pocky sticks, the like little candy?
Uh-huh.
He's the vanilla one.
Yeah, I like that. That's pretty good. He's the quarterback that you can win with if you have a great team around him.
Yeah.
He's also not the quarterback who will elevate a not great team. He's not going to pull a 2016 Aaron Rodgers and single-handedly will a team to the NFC Championship when that team has no business being there because it's starting guys like Ladarius Gunter at quarterback.
Yeah.
So sorry to bring that memory back, but
no,
hey,
it's okay. It just reminds me of how special this team is.
Exactly. Now we get to host an NFC Championship game instead.
Yeah. Getting back to the defense, though, the Rams used tempo, up-tempo pace for a couple different series in this game, and it worked really well. Why do you think that worked so well? What did that exploit in this Packers defense?
Yeah, I think the big thing was that lack of substitution that they got them in some weird sub-patterns and kept the Packers base defense on the field. Because obviously we know that Mike Pettin loves to play light. He loves to play with 5 and 6 defensive backs. And I think that was a way for them to maximize some of those matchups with, with 3 defensive linemen on the field in, you know, second and mediums that normally, you know, the Packers would be going to a sub package. So I think that was probably the biggest thing that I saw. And that might be something that, you know, teams down the line can exploit a little bit, but I think the adjustment there has to be that if it's going to be that much of a problem to be in base on second and third downs, then you just need to suck it up and I guess play your sub package on first down. And if they pick up 8 or 9 yards on first down on the with a run, you kind of have to be okay with it.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, it's interesting because that's kind of how Pettin has always been. He's always been the guy who's been willing to give up some yards on the ground as long as he doesn't give up the big play with the passing game. And so it's surprising that they were so dependent on that base defense on early downs when it seemed like it was pretty clear the tempo was coming.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people were focused coming into this game, and you wrote a piece for the blog about Devontae Adams versus Jalen Ramsey. What do you think about Jalen Ramsey versus Jair Alexander? Who had the better game here?
Well, Jair was tremendous. I think I saw the stat that there were three targets towards Jair. One was completed, and that was a receiver screen that he blew up for a 3-yard loss.
Yeah.
Like, Jair is unbelievable. Whereas we saw Devontae quite literally cook Jalen Ramsey off the line of scrimmage. I mean, there was the one slant route that he ran where Ramsey was up in press coverage and Adams didn't even let him get a finger on him.
He
just had that amazing stutter right off the line, you know, cooked him on that slant and then picked up, you know, 15 yards. So it does. I think if this game had been played this way in the regular season, Jair Alexander would have been first team all pro over Jalen Ramsey just because of the ability to have seen them play in the same game head to head.
Yeah.
As it is, you know, certainly getting second team all pro is no, you know,
no small feat.
That's no knock on Jair for sure.
Yeah.
But, just the tackling ability that he has at his size, is tremendous. And yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you can put those guys up there. You know, Xavier Howard, the Dolphins guy, who was the other first team all pro. He's amazing too. But yeah, Jair is absolutely one of the two or three best corners in the game.
Yeah, you mentioned I think it was three targets. I believe Jalen Ramsey was six targets, six catches, and that touchdown, which to me is it's partially a nod to Devontae Adams, just incredible skills off the line. But also, just going back to the very beginning of our conversation, it was Matt LaFleur and the offensive coaches really, really scheming up how do we get how do we put Devontae Adams in a position to succeed despite Jalen Ramsey, who we know is amazing. And they did it.
Yeah, and I think it's a sign that in today's NFL, an elite offense will pretty much always beat an elite defense.
Yeah.
You know, some of that is the rules and the way it's set up, but just offenses are so good right now that it doesn't matter what you have in terms of the talent and the coaching on defense. Teams are going to be able to find ways to beat you. And, you know, the Packers were, you know, became one of two teams to score 30 points on the Rams all season long in tonight's game.
Yep. So that bodes well for the Packers going into the NFC Championship game, who, when most people are listening to this, will know who they're going to play. Although right now, as you and I record this on Saturday evening, it's about almost 10 p.m. Eastern time. We do not know, but I don't know.
It's going to be an old guy at quarterback. We know that.
It's going to be an old guy. Exactly. I saw some like a joking kind of Sports Illustrated cover that was like two like exaggeratedly aged pictures of the two guys, Brady and Bree, standing across from each other. And the headline was like oldest humans in the history of mankind set to square off this game.
That was pretty good.
Oh man. I don't have any more broad topics. I don't know if any other little things or ticky-tacky things struck you. I did want to bring up, I guess, you know, the Packers get the ball back in the second quarter with 30 seconds left. And they make the most of it. They get a field goal there, but Rodgers goes for the jugular, two throws, on that drive, which should have been picks basically. But they were both in the end zone. Rodgers taking risks in a situation where honestly, you know, you might as well. And I noticed so many people on Twitter who was like, why is Rodgers throwing that? And I tweeted this out. I said, is Rodgers should take more risks Twitter the same as Rodgers was really forcing those two passes Twitter. And a lot of people replied that Venn diagram is a circle, because of course, there was that contingent on Twitter within the last 2 years. Like, Rodgers would be better if he just took more, if he threw more interceptions, he'd be better. And I feel like somehow those are the same people who are mad today that he was throwing up those balls.
So yeah, with Rodgers taking those shots, it felt like he was just trying to get some cheap points at the end of the half.
Totally.
With 30 seconds left, you know, you don't expect the team to, unless you're Bob McGinn, you don't expect the team to go down and score with that much time.
Yes, I haven't used the air horn in a while, but getting a shot in at McGinn, man, it happens in the league every week. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Yeah. All right. But, I mean, I was of the opinion, you know, you've got to throw those balls quickly because there's not much time left when he was throwing those. And I understand taking the shot. But yeah, at the same time, you get a field goal there and you're up by two possessions. And then you still have the opening kickoff of the third quarter to hopefully go down and score, which they ended up doing. So I still would have probably liked to, I understand the willingness to take those risks. But at the same time, I think that's one where you kind of probably play for the field goal in that instance, knowing that that can put you up by two scores.
Yeah.
I would say the one other, you know, there's two other things that jump out to me. One was, I think we need to remember MVS's play on third down in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
Because he turned in a really a rough throw from Rodgers on about a third and three on a screen to the sideline. And he was somehow managed to get about 5 yards on that and pick up a first down. And maybe two or three plays later, that turns into the big touchdown that goes to Alan Lazard. So I think we really need to give MVS some credit for his tremendous play on that one to really move the chains and get that moving. And again, like I keep saying it, but it feels like forever since we've had an NFC Championship game in Green Bay.
Yep.
And you know, it's literally been since before Aaron Rodgers was our starting quarterback. The game before Aaron Rodgers took over as our starting quarterback, to be exact. So I think, you know, legacy is clearly important to him. I'm rooting for this. I'm rooting for Aaron, but honestly, like, this team has been so much fun to watch come together this year. The camaraderie that they share, the whole Gold Zone thing, you know, Yeet becoming a thing over the last year and a half. Just the joy that these guys seem to share on the field. Big Bob talked about it in his piece in the Players Tribune this week. And I think that was, you know, a beautiful piece to kind of illustrate just how this team has come together and, you know, coalesced into this unit that really cares about one another. And I'm making it my mission, you know, over the next week and hopefully over the next 3 weeks to not worry about what happens in the offseason, not worry about if the Packers are going to re-sign guys like Aaron Jones and Corey Linsley, and just enjoy the rest of this ride, because it's been a tremendously fun season to watch. And to have fans back at Lambeau, I think that was also a big deal. Rodgers kind of alluded to it in his post-game interview on Fox. And so, more than anything, this has been one of my favorite Packers teams to watch, just because of the way they play and the way that they, you know, have really come together this season.
Yeah, just a joy and a pleasure to watch, and really special. And I hope everybody cherishes it. I know that the way that you were talking, it seems like we are winding down. I wanted to make one more shout out. You mentioned Big Bob, and I had to give him a shout out for a workmanlike game here with a couple big plays. Yep. Four receptions for 60 yards. And I wanted to bring him up because I wanted to make the point / ask the question to the ether. Has there ever been a player who is more allergic to the idea of going out of bounds? He's just like, he's no, I'm taking the contact no matter what. And he always gets like 6 more yards out of the play. And then he comes up screaming like the ultimate warrior. I just love it. It gets me so pumped up.
Even the one in that 2-minute drill at the end of the first half where it was that nice deep crosser. I think he picked up about 30 or 35 yards or so, but you could see that it hurt him to go out of bounds knowing that they needed to save the clock and save the timeout. So yeah, he's great. I love it. It's great. It's tremendous.
Well, Tex, I'm going to raise a glass, although I just finished it. So, well, I got a little sip left.
So did
there.
I. Yeah, well, here you go.
I'll just take the last little mouthful. Really, really great. Really, really great special game. 32 to 18, the Packers over the Rams. And soon we will find out who they play in the NFC Championship game in Green fucking Bay, Wisconsin. I'm pumped up, man. I don't have anything else to say. I'm about to hit the polka unless you have anything else to add.
Kenny Clark, really good. Rashawn Gary, really good today. You know, pass rush was there when it needed to be in the fourth quarter. So, again, those guys stepped up big late. And, we'll do this again in a good mood in 8 days.
Damn straight, my friend. I said hit the polka, although we don't play the polka on this particular show. But, yeah, got to give props to Gary as well, someone who we trashed for a while, but who has had a great season. Tex, this has been fun, man. I'm going to hit the outro music officially. Thank you for joining me. And
my pleasure.
God, I don't know what else to say. I'm just excited.
Feels good.
It feels good.